KSDP 830 AM Sandpoint, K201DA King Cove, KFPS False Pass.
Welcome to Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce. For more than a dozen years, a program in the Navajo Nation provides support for families with autistic children. The program is also a clearinghouse for the best research and information about autism available. The problem is, information about autism among Native populations is relatively thin, and many families are concerned that a new push by federal health officials could cloud understanding even more. Hear about autism in Native communities coming up right after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Brian Bull, sitting in for Antonia Gonzalez. The weekend of Native Youth Olympic Games wrapped up in Anchorage, Alaska on Saturday. The event lets young athletes from around the state connect and showcase their skills in competitions rooted in indigenous practices. The Alaska Desk's Alona Nyden reports.
Come on, Daisy!
With much fanfare, Daisy Van Blarkum prepares for the final one-foot high kick competition in the Native Youth Olympics on Saturday. She hits 87 inches, which goes above her personal record, and wins her first place. The bleachers are filled with people from all corners of Alaska, but are familiar faces to Van Blarkum. She says making friends with other athletes and coaches is a part of her success.
I compete a lot better when I know everybody and when I'm comfortable around everyone.
The Native Youth Olympics is a three-day event in which high school students participate in a dozen competitions, each representing a different Alaska Native subsistence activity or skill. Joanna Hobson is one of the coaches working to revive the games in Alaska's North Slope. She says this helps reserved students come out of their shell.
As they're starting to learn more of their cultural games, they're starting to learn that courage, they're starting to learn what it means to be who you are, to accept who you are, where you're at, and then to grow from that.
Anchorage athlete Anastasia Wild took second place in a two-foot high kick competition. Like other athletes, she says she loves the community aspect of the games.
We're participating together, not apart, and you get to connect with other people and make new friends, and it's not about winning. It's about beating your personal records and improving not for yourself, but improving for the others around you.
The event started more than 50 years ago with a few dozen participants. This year, the games brought together about 450 athletes, a record number since the COVID-19 pandemic. In Anchorage, I am Alona Nyden.
An Indigenous woman in Manitoba has recently made history by becoming a First Nations youngest ever chief. She has also become the first woman elected to the role. More from Dan Karpinchuk.
Trishelle Bunn is a 25-year-old third-year law student at the University of Manitoba. She was recently named chief of the Birdtail Sioux Dakota First Nation, about 75 miles northwest of Brandon, Manitoba, after beating her opponent with nearly 69% of the vote. She's not without some experience, though. Bunn has just ended her term as the Southern Chiefs Organization's youth chief. She says that gave her some knowledge about what to expect in everyday governance and decision-making. Bunn says being elected to the position of chief is the greatest honor of her life.
In my previous role as a youth chief of the Southern Chiefs Organization, I spoke to the importance of youth in leadership, and I think this is a testament to that. I think, you know, our young people today are really leading that way, where we're entering those leadership spaces and our voices really need to be heard and they deserve to be at every table. And I think my community really spoke to that last night, the way that they voted, that they wanted, you know, someone young and a young voice to lead our people.
Bunn says although she's the first young leader, she won't be the last. She has pledged greater transparency and accountability for her four-year term as chief. She says she has also heard from community members who want more of a say in the First Nations decision-making. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
And several groups are marking today, April 28th, as Autism Awareness Day for Native Americans. While Native children aren't seen as necessarily having higher rates of autism than other groups, a 2023 study published in the Journal of the American Medical Association shows that they, as well as Alaska Natives, Pacific Islander, and Native Hawaiians, have the least access to autism resources per child compared to others. Groups like the NAP Parents Taking Action at Northern Arizona University are promoting more awareness of autism in Native communities. This follows recent events like the 4th Annual Autism Awareness Walk in Nevada, which involved the Pyramid Lake Paiute Tribe. This is National Native News. I'm Brian Bull.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support for law and justice-related programming provided by Hobbs, Strauss, Dean & Walker, LLP, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for over 40 years. More information available at HobbsStrauss.com.
Support for journalism that raises the awareness of child well-being to citizens and to policymakers provided by the Annie E. Casey Foundation, building a brighter future for children, families, and communities. Information at aecf.org.
Support by Siri, with a diverse and strategic investment portfolio for the long-term benefit of their shareholders. Investing in energy, infrastructure, real estate, government services, and more. Information is available at CIRI.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce. Public discussions about autism are heightened right now as the country's new health secretary makes the disorder a priority. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. pledges to determine the cause of autism by this September. He recently spoke publicly, calling autism an epidemic. Here are more of his comments at that event, as recorded by C-SPAN.
These are children who should not be, suffering like this. These are kids who, many of them, were fully functional and regressed because of some environmental exposure into autism when they're 2 years old. And these are kids who will never pay taxes, they'll never hold a job, they'll never play baseball, they'll never write a poem, they'll never go out on a date. Many of them will never use a toilet unassisted. And we have to recognize we are doing this to our children. And we need to put an end to it.
That was Robert Kennedy Jr. speaking about autism in a press conference this month at the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Some of his current and past comments have come under fire by autism researchers and advocates. Today, we'll look at what's known about autism. We'll also look at one program on the Navajo Nation to improve access to research and support services. Join our conversation with a comment or question by calling 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Joining us now from Minneapolis, Minnesota is Jules Edwards. She is an author and disability advocate. She is Anishinaabe. Jules, welcome to Native America Calling.
Bonjour, good morning. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Joining us from Flagstaff, Arizona is Dr. Davis Henderson. He is an associate professor at Northern Arizona University. He is Diné. Good morning, Dr. Henderson, and welcome.
Good morning, Yate. Thank you for having me as well.
Joining us from Gallup, New Mexico is Dr. Candy Running Bear. She is an assistant professor at Western New Mexico University. She is also Diné. Good morning, Dr. Running Bear, and welcome to the show.
Good morning. I'm happy to be here. Thank you.
Jules, I want to begin with you. You are an advocate for autism awareness in the Twin Cities. I know you're involved with several boards and organizations that involve autism awareness. What drew you to this work?
Well, I was drawn to this work when my children were diagnosed with autism about a decade ago. And in the process of learning how to become the parent that they needed me to be, I learned that I am autistic myself. So I kind of just naturally fell into advocacy.
Tell us more. What are the most critical parts of the work you do?
Sure. I think the most critical part of the work that I do is a focus on child safety. There aren't a whole lot of people who notice the intersectionality between disability and race and living within the government systems that we live in under. So I work within advocacy for children and adults and families who are autistic or dealing with disabilities, as well as I serve on the board for the Minnesota Ombudsman for American Indian Families, and we support families who are experiencing interaction with the child protection system. And one of the most tragic facts about our community is that approximately 40% of all children who are put into an out-of-home foster care placement have a disability. And we know that Native children are targeted by these child protection systems and removed from our homes and our cultures. And so much of that could be prevented if our children had appropriate access to supports and services, and families had information and support to live good lives. And so that's sadly lacking. You earlier mentioned that 2023 study that says that Native communities have the least access to autism resources, and that is a catastrophe for our community.
Well, you're involved in some research, and it's funded by the National mm-hmm. Institutes of Health. Can you talk more about the nature of that research and what the status is currently with it?
So I have been working with the Autism Centers of Excellence. There are, I believe that's 9 different locations throughout the U.S. that are funded by the NIH grants to do research in identifying and supporting people with autism specifically. And one of the projects that we were working on or have been working on is a tool to help people access a diagnosis that are often overlooked and missed. So we're looking at late diagnosis, and instead of using the current tools that base a diagnosis on what we can see from the outside of a person's experience, this research is asking people, what are you experiencing? And does this meet the qualifications for an autism diagnosis? Is this, you know, what can we do to find the people who have been missed? Because as a late diagnosed person myself, it is kind of an amazing experience to finally have an answer for why has stuff been so difficult for me for no reason. And then a new diagnosis can help just reprocess. It can help people develop specific tools to improve their quality of life, to live self-determined lives of their choosing. So that research also prioritizes people who are girls and women. We're trying to find people whose cultural differences cause them to be overlooked in the current models of diagnostic tools. Because even things such as like eye contact, there's, you know, the stereotype that autistic people don't make eye contact. Well, a lot of cultures don't think the eye contact mm-hmm. is even respectful. So we want to take those different kinds of considerations into account to develop better tools. So currently, I'm sorry, you asked about the current status. We actually have lost funding for this research due to the current administration cutting off funding.
Okay. Jules, you determined later in life that you're autistic. Tell me more about how you were able to make that diagnosis.
Sure. As I said, my children were diagnosed, my sons were diagnosed, and what I know to be true as an Anishinaabe person is that our children choose us to be their parents before they're born, and part of that is the responsibility as a parent to become the parent your children need, because they choose us because they believe in us. So I knew my children believed in me to become what they needed me to be. So I borrowed every single book from the library about autism. I read stories. I joined parent support groups. I just took in as much information as I could. And as I'm learning, I'm recognizing myself in this information. And so I thought I would get an evaluation myself just to, you know, see if this is if this is part of my story, if this is part of my life. And I did, and it was just kind of eye-opening to kind of reprocess my whole life. And it's really helped me as a parent, because I better understand my children. I can better evaluate, like, what do they need? And how can I support them to live their lives the way that they need to? And I feel like we're doing really well. My oldest two are adults now. I have a middle school age child as well. So learning about autism. So autism is a social communication and sensory disability, and that is all that it is. So it encompasses, we socialize differently than is normal, quote unquote, like the cultural norms. We communicate in our own ways. Some people speak, some people don't speak. We may use AAC, which is alternative and augmentative communication. It could be a tablet, it could be sign language, it could be really any form of nonverbal communication. And it's a sensory disability, so it impacts how we receive and process information about our environment and how we interact with our environment around us. And so learning about autism as a disability, and then learning about, you know, how do we bring in regulation? So there's this colonial idea that everybody should be able to self-regulate. Well, Indigenous research has shown that co-regulation is much more helpful and beneficial to us as people. So that means that if I'm emotionally dysregulated, if I'm upset, I do really well if I have somebody helping me to regulate rather than, oh, I have to figure it out by myself. Or if I'm having sensory dysregulation, that's one of the reasons that having occupational therapy is such an important tool for autistic people, because it helps us process those things with a partner who understands and can provide the support and ideas that we need. So,
thank you, Jules. This is really transfixing, just listening to you describe not just your own personal journey, but the work that you do, and just some of this background with regard to autism. We're going to take a short break. We're going to continue the conversation, and we'll learn more about autism and its impacts with regard to Native American people. And we encourage listeners to join the conversation. All you have to do is pick up your phone and call 1-800-996-2848. That's 1-800-996-2848, and that'll connect you with our studio, where we have producers who are waiting by, and they'll take your call, and you can share your comments, you can share your insights, any experiences you have on the air with other listeners. And we have stations all across Indian Country who tune into the show every day, and you can interact and you can share your insights with those listeners as well. So we'll take a short break and we'll come right back. And that phone number again is 1-800-996-2848. Before the presidents were carved into it, Mount Rushmore was dedicated as a national monument 100 years ago this year. It's become a patriotic symbol, but from the start, it has left a troubled legacy. We'll look at the history of broken treaties and even white supremacy that colors Mount Rushmore's public image. That's on the next Native America Calling.
Challenges to societal harmony abound. Trauma, depression, addiction. In Native communities, these challenges affect nearly everyone. The Native American Social Work Studies Institute educates social workers for careers to address the needs of Native communities. You can be part of the solution as a peer support worker, community health worker, or a counselor with culturally relevant training from the Native American Social Work Studies Institute. Info at online.nmhu.edu. New Mexico Highlands University supports this show.
Yahweh, 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 Yahweh,
Thank you for listening to Native America Calling. We're talking with Native researchers and advocates about misinformation surrounding autism. And a little later, we'll be looking at a program aiming to improve developmental services on the Navajo Nation. Listeners can join with a comment or question by calling 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. I want to introduce another guest into our conversation now. Joining us from Flagstaff, Arizona is Dr. Olivia Lindley. She is an assistant professor at Northern Arizona University. Good morning, Dr. Lindley, and welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
I learned a lot just now listening to Jules describe some of this information with regard to autism. I wanted to ask you, though, how has the public's understanding of autism evolved over the years?
Sure. Yeah, I think it's evolved a lot. As a researcher in autism, we have seen a lot of new evidence come out about what autism is, how it really is a spectrum condition. As the first caller described, typically individuals on the spectrum have issues with social communication and restricted and repetitive behaviors. But it's really a pattern of different issues that constitute what is autism. And the diagnostic criteria have changed with the DSM-5 that came out in 2013. And then new tools, again, like the first caller was describing, that have been developed to make autism easier to diagnose in lots of different health settings, including primary care.
Dr. Lindley, U.S. Health Secretary Kennedy is making autism a priority for research. He said autistic children will never write a poem or play baseball. How accurate is that statement?
As a researcher, I would say, again, autism is a spectrum condition, and that means that there are different levels of impairment that may be associated with it. And so that means that while some children may be nonverbal, other children are extremely verbal. And we also know that things like IQ, the intelligence quotient, varies across children on the spectrum. And so, you know, we really can't make generalizations about all children on the spectrum in terms of their ability to participate in activities of daily living, whatever those may be. And again, you know, just reinforcing autism is a spectrum condition. And when you've seen one child with autism, you've seen one child with autism, and the same goes for individuals of any age, really.
Now, Secretary Kennedy also says that environmental toxins are the cause of the rise of childhood autism. He calls it an epidemic. What can you tell us about the causes of autism?
As a researcher, science points to multiple causes of autism. So while there may be environmental factors at play, there's also research that suggests genetics may be a factor and other aspects of individuals' environments. But there is no single cause of autism that has been identified at this point in time, according to the scientific evidence.
Okay. Is there any research at all with regard to anything parents can do to lower the chances of autism in a child?
That's not my particular area, but based on the science that I have read, I would say that autism is not a preventable condition. There are lots of things that parents can do to help optimize health for children with autism and get them access to services and supports that can help them to thrive. But as far as preventing the condition, I am not familiar with research that speaks to that specifically.
Okay. Would you characterize autism as an epidemic? Is that accurate to describe?
The prevalence of autism has certainly increased as the recent report that came out from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention a week or so ago shows. So current prevalence estimates are around 1 in 31 children right now. A lot of why we think that is as a scientific community is because autism has become easier to diagnose, and there is a lot more awareness of what autism is in different communities.
Okay. Common misinformed claims about autism. Can you talk a little bit more about what those might be? Maybe even stereotypes that are equated with autism.
Sure. There is research that speaks to stigmatization of individuals on the spectrum. And again, I would just say that we know autism is a highly variable condition in terms of different characteristics that individuals may have and display. So I think that's really important to understand. The other thing I would say is there isn't a single cause that we have identified, and that there has been misinformation around things like childhood vaccines, specifically the MMR vaccine. And we know that that's a vaccine that has done wonders in terms of preventing disease in children, measles, mumps, and rubella is what I'm talking about. And so the benefits of those types of vaccines far outweigh the risks in terms of public health. And so that's another piece of misinformation I'd like to highlight.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Lindley. We've got a caller on the line. This is Robert, who is listening in Wisconsin on station WOJB. Hello, Robert. What's your comment?
My comment is I got a stage 3 daughter, and she's nonverbal. So is there any solutions as detoxing first, or how do we, is like, I'm just trying to figure out, because she's nonverbal. And I'm just trying to find out, like, I'm not getting much help as we need, because she's got 6 other siblings, and I'm just trying to figure out, like, what is the best solution? Like, how do we prevent that? Like, I'm trying to, because there's some words that she'll say, but okay. And then after that, it's just like, I'm just trying to figure out what's the best solutions out there for
autism. Okay, thank you. Dr. Lindley, any information you could share with our listener, Robert, with regard to his daughter would be really appreciated. And I'm also curious to know, he mentions stage 3. Can you give our listeners a little bit more information what that means?
Sure. So starting with the stages, there are 3 levels or stages that autism can be characterized into according to the DSM-5, which is a tool that's, or criteria rather, that's used to diagnose autism. And so level 3 typically means in children that they require substantial support and that they may have more impairment related to their social communication and behaviors that impact their day-to-day life. And so I believe the caller was from Wisconsin. I'm based in Arizona, and one thing to know is that state systems of care for autistic individuals vary quite a bit. However, there may be services and supports specifically for children on the spectrum who are nonverbal that could help your daughter. I'm thinking about augmentative and alternative communication devices, which I know my colleague, who's also part of this show, could speak more to as a speech and language pathologist, Dr. Henderson. And then there are other more kind of low-tech solutions like visual schedules or picture schedules that could be a resource for the caller in their home. So there may be things like that that could be provided through a disability agency in Wisconsin. Sometimes even healthcare providers now may have someone who specializes in autism or other types of neurodevelopmental conditions. And so that could also be a resource. But I would just encourage the caller to speak with his child's healthcare provider and potentially teachers if she's in special education.
Thank you, Dr. Lindley. You mentioned bringing in Dr. Davis Henderson for some additional expertise, and he is on the line. He's a guest as well on the show, an associate professor at Northern Arizona University. Dr. Henderson, any additional information or anything you can offer our listener, Robert, in Wisconsin?
Right, of course. So in regards to my colleague mentioning the augmentative and alternative communication, there are different levels of AAC that we would call them. So we have low-tech, mid-tech, and high-tech. So for nonverbal individual, just based on their cognitive ability and taking into account other factors, so I would definitely maybe consider using low-tech communication. So this could be picture exchange communications to help them communicate. So then there's also different levels within level one, or sorry, in regards to the low-tech, using one word, two words. Now, are we looking at grammar? No. So we're just overall looking at the functional communication.
Thank you, Dr. Henderson. And let's talk a little bit more about some autism-related initiatives and programs serving the Navajo Nation. You're involved with a program called NEH, Parents Taking Action. Tell us more about it. What's the purpose and why was it created?
So the Parent Taking Action is helping families how to work with their child. As mentioned, there are limited resources on the reservation. So a lot of times parents do not fully understand what autism is. So we're just providing services, providing resources and more information about what autism is on the reservation. So a lot of times children are on the reservation. Children typically are serviced through the schools, but outside of schools, there may not be any known resources to particularly work with their child. So a lot of families would move to the outskirts of the reservation to receive more services. So in this case, we are bringing the resource to the reservation to help with providing more information and helping families be able to work with their individuals in regards to joint attention, also just overall communication, and then also just overall just working with them in regards to everyday life.
And the information and research that you're able to pass down to program participants, where do you folks get that information?
So Parent Taking Action is adopted by Dr. Magana. And then also we had our monthly meeting in Chula City where we brought in other resources. They gave presentations about IEPs. They gave presentations about DD. So there are all these different programs that we've invited to provide information and resources to families. With that, we also made a list of resources for the families, and we would definitely send those out to families who requested more information. One of the areas that we helped as well with advocacy, parent advocate. So we would set them up with individuals who would attend IEP meetings or talk about more resources that are needed in the schools and so forth. So overall, we've just been providing as much information through presentations and also through our Parent Taking Action program.
And how do families get connected with the program?
We have an email, so a lot of times, and when we have our meetings, we get a list of families who, or information from families who would like more information. So we send out our information, and then they would tell other families about our program, and then they would reach out to us.
or we had community members who are part of our program, and they would just nonchalantly meet other family members. At Home Depot, for an example, they would share our program, and that's how we get more families to reach out to us and want more information about our program and other information regards to autism.
All right. Dr. Anderson, thank you. Now, as I understand it, the focus of much of your research is on speech-language pathology, and I've already learned just from our other guests that speech and language, it sounds like they can be affected by autism. So tell us more about that research and how it could potentially be a game changer with regard to Navajo families and autism.
Yeah, so... And aside from working with Navajo children with autism, I also work with Navajo individuals with speech and language impairment. So in one of my research we just completed was looking at standardized assessments among Navajo children using speech. And we identified that most assessments do not accurately classify Navajo children as having speech impairment. This is due to what I like to call Navajo influence English, where Navajo speech sound influences part of our English production. And so that so non-Navajo SLPs would identify that as an error. So when we're looking at language, we have to identify different parts of language, such as syntax, like the old word order. So again, looking at English and Navajo, there would be a difference between the two. So again, looking at speech and language overall, I think there's a long way to go in regards to identifying the developmental norms for Navajo children. So right now, we're just using the mainstream norm to identify whether a Navajo child has speech or language impairment. So that's my research area.
All right, thank you, Dr. Henderson. We're talking about autism today, and we're having a conversation with guests who work with various issues related to autism. We're learning about a program there on the Navajo Nation. We've also learned about efforts in the Twin Cities. And I encourage anyone listening to the show right now, if you have any experience dealing with autism in your community, maybe you work as in healthcare, or maybe you are a parent or a relative of somebody, and you could share some insights or any perspectives at all with regard to the topic today, we'd sure like to hear from you. All you've got to do is pick up your phone, call us at 1-800-996-2848. 1-800-996-2848. We're going to take a short break, and we'll come back and talk to Dr. Candy Running Bear, an assistant professor at Western New Mexico University. Stay with us.
Trickster Cultural Center, an authentic first voice of Native American veterans and cultural arts, will host the 2025 Pride Celebration honoring diversity through Native drum and dance, artistry, resource exchanges, and vendor fair. Trickster Cultural Center's Pride Celebration is open to everyone at no charge June 7th from 2 to 7 p.m. in Schaumburg, Illinois. More under events at TricksterCulturalCenter.org or at 847-301-2090. Trickster Cultural Center supports this show. Did you know that one person can save up to 8 lives and heal dozens more through the gift of organ and tissue donation? Give hope to thousands of people across the U.S. waiting for a life-saving organ transplant. Learn more about the power of organ, eye, and tissue donation with Life Center Northwest, the organ procurement organization serving all of Alaska, at lcnw.org. That's lcnw.org. Support for this program is provided by AARP. AARP creates and connects people to unique tools and programs, helps conserve personal resources, and tackles the issues that matter most to individuals, families, and communities. What AARP does might surprise people. For more information and resources, including member benefits, AARP advocacy, and more, go to aarp.org. Support provided by Alaska Growth Capital,
The Aleut Marketplace is now open. Aleut Corporation shareholders and registered descendants are eligible. Applications are available at alaskagrowth.com under Marketplace.
Skugtash. For more than 40 years, Ramona Farms has revived ancient traditional foods. Tepary beans, pinoli, polentas, and more, all from store.ramonafarms.com. Ramona Farms supports this show. Omnye.
You're listening to Native America Calling. There's still time to join our conversation with a comment or question. You can call 1-800-996-2848. 1-800-996-2848. We're talking about autism in Native communities. And you can also leave a comment on our website, NativeAmericaCalling.com. And we've got social media as well, Facebook, Instagram, Blue Sky, Threads. You can post, comment on any of those platforms as well. Let's now talk with Dr. Candy Running Bear. She joins us from Gallup, New Mexico. She is an assistant professor at Western New Mexico University. And Dr. Running Bear, thank you again for joining the show. I learned a lot just now listening to Dr. Henderson. Tell us more. What specific challenges do Navajo parents of autistic children face?
Yes, some of the challenges that I would say we've heard is that our families are familiar with services that are provided in the school, such as physical therapy, occupational therapy, speech and language pathology, but there are many who are not familiar with other services that are available, such as applied behavioral analysis, or even such as using augmentative and alternative communication devices, like Dr. Lindley and Dr. Henderson mentioned earlier. So that, I would say, is a challenge, and including a lot of the parents also mentioned that they hadn't received parent training prior to receiving the parent training that Diné Parents Taking Action offered them. So those are some of the challenges.
All right, thank you. Now, you mentioned applied behavioral analysis. Can you tell us more about that, Dr. Running Bear?
Yes. So applied behavioral analysis, it is a scientific approach. It uses evidence-based principles of learning to identify and define specific behaviors, and then also develop interventions to increase the desired behaviors, and also helps to decrease problematic behaviors and can improve social communication and daily living skills.
All right, thank you. Now, often I'm using the word parents when I'm talking about families, children with autism, but caretakers might not necessarily be parents. So what do you folks do to engage entire families?
Yes. So our program is Diné Parents Taking Action. It uses a community health worker model. And so this is where our Diné parents who have an older child with autism, or caretakers, Diné parents or caretakers who have an older child with autism, are teaching Diné parents or caregivers who are just finding out that their child has autism or has a younger child with autism, lessons from the manual. And so we refer to our parents who are teaching the lessons as family advisors. And that's one of the ways we, because we do recognize that it's not always the biological parents who are caring for and raising children with autism.
Okay. Now, you have a PhD in early childhood special education. Tell us more about the role of special education in this type of work.
Yes. So, I've worked as an early childhood special education teacher for about 13 years, most of which has been on the Navajo Nation. And in my experience, some of the families do are referred for early intervention, so receiving some services early on while the child is young, through, for example, on the Navajo Nation, we have Growing in Beauty, which provides early intervention services to families on the Navajo Nation. And then when they reaches the age of three, they transition into receiving their special educational services from the public schools in their community. And but there are also families who are not aware of the early intervention programs in the community. And this goes back to just getting those resources and information out to families so they can recognize early on and start to have their child receiving these services earlier. But that I would say, back to that question about challenges for families, that would be another challenge, is the lack of resources readily available in rural areas that where there's a need for our Diné families who have children with autism.
Thank you, Dr. Running Bear. I want to go back to the phones. We have another caller on the line. This is Jane, who is listening on KUNM in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Hello, Jane. You are on the air.
Hello. Nice to listen to the program today. I have a friend in California whose son was diagnosed at a very young age with autism, and she immediately started doing all the research that she could. And now he's in his early 30s, and she's done a lot of research on diet and supplements. It's not a cheap diet, but it's like totally grain-free, so to diminish the inflammation in the brain. And clean diet, vegetables, meat, without additives and chemicals and so on, as clean as possible. And when he, as he was growing up, would go off of his diet, he could tell immediately the issues that he was having, exacerbation of the autism issues. But now he's in his early 30s, he's high functioning, he doesn't go off his diet, and he's considering opening a restaurant with a focus on the special diets, but clean, but really tasty and good food. So, and I know she does believe in the connection with vaccinations, but yeah, he's quite high functioning, and he gets the importance of staying on his rigid diet. So I just probiotics and that kind of thing to kind of make the gut healthy and so on, and lots of expensive supplements, so it's not cheap, but clean mm-hmm. diet's easier than, you know, all the junk food that's easier just to give kids, and no sugar, that kind of thing. So right. Anyway, that's all. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jane. Really appreciate you calling in and joining the conversation. Dr. Lindley, the caller, Jane, mentions diet and nutrition. Can you add anything to that information?
Sure. We are still learning a lot about the role that diet and nutrition, including supplements, can play in autism and issues related to autism. There are a number of different special diets that there is some research on, but at this point in time, there isn't kind of a definitive answer about, you know, this diet, for example, can help optimize social communication and restricted behavior, for example. And so, again, I would just say for parents that might be considering a special diet for their child and or particular supplements, you know, that's something that can be really helpful to talk with your child's pediatrician or other medical doctor about, and kind of have that conversation around weighing potential risks, benefits, as well as costs. I heard the caller say that, you know, some of the supplements and whatnot can be costly. And so that's definitely another important consideration to make for families, you know, that are weighing these different diets and supplements and other types of services or treatments, if you will.
All right. Dr. Lindley, I want to ask you one more question, and I want to go back to Dr. Running Bear. But what age, is there an average age or approximate age at which most people are diagnosed with autism?
I believe that the last report that came out from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention had the average age of autism diagnosis around 4. However, we do know that autism can be diagnosed when children are as young as 1. However, it does depend on, you know, how the autism is presenting, what other types of conditions they might have. You know, so for example, if a child has multiple conditions, it may be harder to diagnose and take a provider or a provider team longer to diagnose when the child is older, if that makes sense.
All right, thank you. Mm-hmm. Dr. Running Bear, I want to go back to you. And again, this program that we're talking about that serves the Navajo Nation, Diné Parents Taking Action, how would you like to see it expanded?
That's a great question. We have had, right now, our program is being funded by the Mercy Cares Community Reinvestment Grant. And through that, we've been able to reach out to families in partnership with the Tuba City Regional Medical Corporation. And a lot of the families that they serve are on the Navajo Nation, but they also serve the Hopi community as well. And so we have received some inquiries about possibly extending the program to Hopi families as well. And so we know that there is a need and a want for culturally tailored parent training programs. And so this one that we have right now is in particular for Navajo families. So we hope to be able to fill this need in the future.
Thank you, Doctor. Appreciate it. Let's go back now to Jules Edwards. She kicked off our conversation, and she is an author and disability advocate in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And Jules, you had talked with our producers before the show, and I think you mentioned it as well earlier about the high rate of sexual assault for women and girls with autism. Is this information widely known?
Unfortunately, it is not widely known. So the research indicates that over 90% of autistic girls and women will experience sexual assault in their lifetime, and I believe it's around 48% will experience sexual assault 10 or more times in their lifetime. And those are general numbers. They aren't, intersectional. We're not noticing the racial disparity for Native American girls and women. So we can only assume that it's much higher within our community, which is very frightening for our children and as they age into adults. And so we genuinely need some culturally responsive care for our community to protect our children. And without even this knowledge being widely known, there aren't very many initiatives that are focused on it. And in fact, current models of care compound this risk. So services like ABA, it's called Applied Behavior Analysis. It is a behavior modification program. Oftentimes people market it as a therapy. It is not a therapy. The people who administer it are not therapists. They collect and analyze data and they modify behavior based on the data. There's been research that shows that it is an ineffective service. The Department of Defense recently did the largest study of ABA services, and it found that the services
are not effective in the goals that they're hoping for. And the autistic community has been very vocal about the harms that can occur in these programs, because it takes away self-determination. It's a compliance-based program, so we're training our children to listen to the adults around them, and we aren't teaching children about how to set boundaries for their own body. And as an autistic, once upon a time young woman, I didn't know how to set boundaries for myself, and that let me, it put me at risk. And I don't want that for any of our girls or mm-hmm. boys. So we really need to make sure that all of our services are culturally responsive. We need to think about what do our communities need, because tools like ABA, they were developed based on research of white boys, and they're based on white cultural values. Communities traditionally are disciplinary. We can use that in today. We can use social stories or preparing for an activity. That's a model, or that's a method of discipline that is based on the indigenous practice of storytelling. We have cartooning okay. to process an activity afterwards. There are so many things that we can do to keep our kids safe, and we're not doing them.
Jules, thank you for providing that additional insight. And it sounds like one of the challenges here is just information. So what do you recommend for our listeners who might want to get more information and learn more about autism? Where's the best place that they can go?
I would say that there are a number of really good resources. The Autistic Self-Advocacy Network has quite a bit of information. The Autistic Women and Non-Binary Network. There are a lot of resources within the community. The Autism Society of America has chapters throughout the country. And reading, I co-authored a book titled I Will Die on This Hill, and it's about parenting autistic children. And I pulled some, cultural information into that to share with others okay. so they can learn.
Mm-hmm. All right. I'm sorry. We're out of time, Jules. But thank you for joining all of our guests. Jules Edwards, Dr. Olivia Lindley, Dr. Candy Rungbear, and Dr. Davis Henderson. Unfortunately, we're out of time, so we're going to have to wrap up. But please join us again tomorrow when we'll discuss the 100th anniversary of the creation of Mount Rushmore and the troubling history surrounding what has become a patriotic symbol. Hope you'll join us. I'm Sean Spruce.
Support from Dartmouth College hosting its Tribal Leadership Academy July 28th to August 2nd in New Hampshire. Up to 25 new or appointed tribal government leaders and a group of experienced presenters will consider intergovernmental relations, economic development, healthcare, natural resources, and tribal law and order. Dartmouth College will cover the travel and attendance costs. Application available at dartmouthtriballeadershipacademy.com. Application deadline is May 16th, 2025.
Support provided by Amerind. Amerind is 100% tribally owned and partners with tribes and their businesses to provide affordable commercial insurance coverage, protect tribal sovereignty, and strengthen Native American communities by helping to keep dollars in Indian country. Information about property, liability, commercial auto, and workers' comp available at Amerind.com. That's Amerind.com.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Fiber Plus Internet is now available in Sandpoint and King Cove. GCI offers high-speed internet in your community at the same plans and pricing as in Anchorage. More information is available at gci.com/internet.